Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and today I am talking with John and Jim about recommitting to the work. This is something we've done in the past because, you know, hey, who doesn't need a pep talk? The work we do is incredibly difficult. We just wanted to have a conversation today about some of the ways that we stay committed to the work. So I'm just going to start off with one thing that I think can be helpful when you face overwhelm. And that's what we hear, whether we're training or meeting with folks, is overwhelm tends to be the piece that really kind of wears people out. And so the concept that I just want to reiterate is the one legal problem concept that we've talked about before. And just to state that in case you're a new listener, it's that always remembering that your client really does only have one legal problem, and that is that they're in the custody of the state and they need to be in the custody of a family. Now, in any given case, you may have 8 million things that you could do, but sometimes just recentering on the primary legal problem and what is the very next thing, the very most important action you can take to move in that direction, or to make sure that a parent is moving in that direction. Sometimes focusing on what you can control and problems you can solve can really help to reduce the overwhelm that can come when you have so many things coming at you.
Right, Angela. And why do we keep coming back to that one legal problem? And I think we've talked before about everybody pulling in one direction as a profession. And, you know, we're not here saying we're the ones, the only way to do things is our way. That's not what we're saying. But we do think it's important to get the message out that we should all be trying to pull in the same general direction. I always think about that scene from Finding Nemo or Finding Dory, one of those movies, oh, right? Geez. Where all the fish get caught in the net, right? And they're all panicking, they're all freaking out. And then I think it's Dory, might be Nemo, says, "Hey, everyone, swim down. Everyone, if we all just swim down, we can break the hoist and free ourselves from this net. Just keep swimming." And they all start to pull in one direction, right? And they sink the boat or whatever, they break the net. And as a profession, we're kind of like that school of fish. We're swimming in different directions, right? And if we could, and it'd be so powerful if we could keep going in one direction. Because one reason, one big reason that we're doing this podcast is to raise the profile of our profession, right? I mean, and it's challenging because it's not, and this is across all fields within child welfare. If you think about it, there's no context for wanting to work in child welfare. Like when I was a little boy, I wanted to be a cop. I wanted to be a police officer. That's just what I wanted to do. I wanted to, the neighborhood police cop would drop by. I'd get to sit in his car and put his hat on. And you know, that's what I wanted to do. And then I read a book. It was, I think it was called The New Centurions, which really dates me. But it was what it's really like to be a cop. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. I don't want to be a cop. And if you want to be a cop, you should watch On Call on Amazon. It will definitely convince you not to be a cop. It's a very scary show. But like, let me ask you guys, when you were little, what did you want to be? Real little, I'm talking about.
Jim, you get to go first on that one. Do you remember?
You put me on the spot.
Oh, I can go. I can go because I actually know. I wanted to be a choreographer on Broadway. That was my thing. I loved dance. And then when it came time in high school and college, my parents looked at me and said, "You're going to do what?" And I said, "I'm going to go to law school." Dreams lost. All right, yeah. Jim, that's enough time for you.
I think for a minute I wanted to be a priest.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
What?
Yeah.
I was going to be a cop. You were going to be a priest. Such good Irish Catholic boys.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Cop and a priest.
Well, yeah, that's how you end up in a life of service, is being raised this way. But I slowly figured out everything that goes into being a priest, and that was off the table pretty quickly. But I do remember that minute when that's what I wanted to do, because I saw the uniform and I saw that somebody doing it. And it's so when you have that model of something that you see, right, John? That's
right.
What you choose as a kid.
That's what I'm talking about, context, right? So you could poll 100 kids. You could poll 1,000 little kids today. No one's going to say, "I want to be a child welfare worker." I want to work in child welfare. They might say, I want to be an attorney, right? We have context for that. And we probably at some point in our lives all said, I want to be an attorney. But like, if I told you tomorrow when you wake up, you're going to be a cop, you would probably do okay. You've watched enough TV shows and heard enough about cops that you could probably fake your way through the day with the gun and the badge. You know how to act.
I think cops would argue with you on that, but I to get back to the point that you're making, I think what you're trying to say is that our field is not visible. We're just not visible at any level, and we're not visible even in the legal field. And this is a critically important role that people can play if they have the heart and mind for it.
Right. And yeah, the point is that you don't have context for this, right? You have context for a butcher, baker, candlestick maker, but not for this. So like, but what I can tell you is that 90% of the people we interview either discovered this career path and this and juvenile law in law school, or the first time they heard about it was when they saw the ad for the job and it spoke to them. And 100% of our applicants say they want to do something meaningful. The last application that we received, the cover letter, I'm going to read a section of it to you. This is what it says. This job description caught my attention as if it was talking directly to me. I am looking for a career change where I can feel like I am making a difference. I have been practicing for over 2 decades in personal injury. While I have helped many clients, it often comes down to money in personal injury. That is a repeating theme of people who apply to work in this field. Those buzzwords, I'm looking to make a difference. This is speaking to me. You know, I'm a successful lawyer, but there's something that is beyond money that is missing from my career choice that I still need. So I think, you know, in terms of us today, in being in this field, I do think that there is some reason to have gratitude that we found our way into the field and we do get to do meaningful work. But that's a struggle too. So it is finding the meaning on some days.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the other things we want to talk about is how important the work you all do and how important your role is. And this is more than just about, you know, feeling good and good vibes. It's about just the reality that the presence of the children's lawyer really is important, and their role in the system and their perspective on the case is absolutely critical. Because you can sometimes, being a lawyer, you can lose sight of the fact that you see the world differently than other people do. And that's why you are so critically important to the case and to the trajectory of the child's life. As lawyers, we can walk into Publix and see water on the floor and we think, oh, what a liability cliche that is. You know, another 10 people can walk by that and maybe think someone could slip on that. A lot of people won't even notice it. When you get through law school and you start practicing, your mind starts to become focused in a way that looks for liability, looks for problems, and looks for solutions to those problems. And so when your mind is trained that way, it's going to be a great benefit to your client, to the system, especially a system that is, you know, kind of limping along, sometimes breaking down along the ways, like child welfare is. And so when you can work in that system that is in so deep need of problem solvers and be one of those people, it's critically important not only to the system you work in, but to each individual kid whose lives you're going to touch. And so we're not saying this just to make people feel good about their profession. We're saying because it's just a reality that the children's lawyer is the one who reads the home study and sees the problems and asks the question that's laying there in plain sight for us to see. But the reason it's not answered in the home study is not because the caseworker who did the home study is an idiot. It's because they're a social worker and they don't have the training that a lawyer has. That's what is going to make a big difference in a lot of these cases. Just being an effective advocate and using the mind that you've been trained to have and to use through law school and through your practice. it's the nature of a lawyer to see a problem and doggedly pursue it to its solution. So if a children's lawyer isn't playing this role in the system, think about it for a second. There's not really someone who is. That's why we think this profession is so crucial, is that the children's lawyer plays a pivotal role that is heretofore unrecognized, maybe by society at large, maybe by the profession itself in a lot of ways. But that's something that we are trying to change with our messaging. And if we can grow this sense of importance and this sense of community within our profession, it's going to lift all boats.
Right. We are not shy about saying that we want this profession to be valued. Think about our clients, right? They are on, their family is basically in the ER. It doesn't, right? I mean, this is, their family is in the emergency room when they come to court for a shelter hearing, for a removal hearing. This is as bad as it gets for a family. The family has fallen apart and the court is now going to try to put that family back together again. So the people who are doing the surgery on this child's life, on this family's life, those people should be just as valued as the people who do the surgery and put together the people who come into the real emergency room, right? So our society values pediatricians for what they do for our society's children. Our society will one day value our children's attorneys as a profession as well. But we need to all be pulling in the same direction so that we are having the impact that I know we can have. I know empirically that a well-trained children's attorney can not only significantly impact a child's future, but can actually impact the entire system of their community in ways that benefit hundreds or even thousands of children down the road. So that's the power of pulling together. And that's kind of what our, one of our big missions is, our long-term goals is to see our profession raised up.
You know, and as you were talking, or as both of you were talking, I was just thinking, I'll use this phrase for you, Jim. For some people, we're preaching to the choir, right? Like there's some of you nodding your head saying, yes, 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 this is exactly how I feel. But there are some of you out there because, and we know this from our experience in talking to leaders and people on the ground, where the children's lawyer role isn't valued day to day. The expectations of the judges are low. And that's what we want to change. And I think the important part of that is that while we're, you know, we're a lot of times asking you to do more or try new things or step up, step into that lead counsel role and take charge of the case, while in one way it sounds like more work, the reality is that to stay in this profession, to see the results, when you come to it because you want to have meaningful work, then you need to see results. And the only way to do that is to really push out on some of these things. And it's hard. It is so hard to push back against a judge that maybe you're before 2 or 3 days a week or every week. It's very hard to file new things, to fight things that have just been accepted in the past. But we just want to encourage you to do that not only for your clients, but for yourself. Because when you do take a stand on some of these hard things and you see the gradual changes that can happen and you see the light bulb go on in the judge's eyes when that different perspective is presented, when you push back on the way it's always been done, all of those things will lead to not only better outcomes for your kids, but better job satisfaction for you and momentum and motivation. And so they kind of go hand in hand, but we just like to revisit this issue at the beginning of the year because it's a time when people are kind of looking at doing new things, reconsidering aspects of their life. And we don't want you to go be PI attorneys. We want you to stay with right. The meaningful work. Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, when I interview people who have come to the coming to the profession for the first time, who are drawn to it, I don't sugarcoat it for them. You know, I tell them the truth. What we all know is that some days it feels like one step up, two steps back. And then on other days, it feels like two steps up and only one step back. And that's the definition sometimes of a victory, right? I mean, it's like you're rolling a boulder up a hill, but some days it's raining and some days it's sunny. The sunny days are a lot easier than the rainy days. You're still rolling that boulder up the hill, though. And I think that feeling, that heaviness that we hear reported to us from other attorneys around the country that we talk to, is that is the changes we're trying to make in some of the families we're working with is it's sometimes it's generational in nature. And it feels so heavy because it's so hard. You know, getting over addiction is hard. Breaking the cycle of domestic violence is hard. Learning to be a parent when you yourself maybe weren't parented and you have no context for parenting is hard. And that's what the boulder is that I'm talking about. But one thing, the way to look at it is, yes, the problems are generational, but sometimes the results of your work are generational too. And that's, so flip the script on that thought and think, yeah, maybe it feels like we took one step up and two steps back on this case, but maybe in the future, the positive outcome will be something I'll never see. You know, so one thing that I always remember is the story of a guy, I think his name was Seward, and he was the head of the Massachusetts Institution of Charities or something, and he was in charge of charities. So he decided to go on a tour of the poorhouse, which in Massachusetts, Concord, Massachusetts, housed 800 people. It was a feral place, okay? They basically put all the poor people in it. So you had predators in there. It was described as having, you know, maniacs, which meant untreated mentally ill people, the handicapped, orphans, all housed together on cots, horrible place, rats running around. This is the 1840s.
Thank you for clarifying, because I was yeah. about to be like, hey, friend, you need to use some different terminology.
This is the 1840s. Carry on. Right. But that this is, I'm using the description of the 1840s and the woman who wrote about it. Yeah. And as this guy is doing his tour of the orphanage, and a little girl comes up to him and says, Mr. Seward, I want to go to school. A little girl who's basically blind and comes up and throws herself in front of his path and says, I want to go to school. And so this guy uses his pull and his skills and his weight, and he gets her into a school for the blind. And he forgets about her. That's it. That's all he does. But, you know, he had to go back to his office. He had to write a letter. He had to call in some favors. He got her a scholarship to the school for the blind. And when she gets to the school for the blind, everyone laughs at her because she is so far behind. She was abandoned as a 10-year-old. Her mother died of tuberculosis. Her father was an alcoholic. They were Irish. They came over because of the famine. Just generational poverty and neglect. She knew nothing. That girl grew up to be Annie Sullivan, the only person who could reach Helen Keller and teach her. And look at the impact Helen Keller had on the world for blind people, for deaf people, to inspire millions of people. And what about Mr. Seward? And I'm not even sure I got his name right, which I feel really bad about, but we'll put it in the show notes.
That's good.
He's the guy who could have walked past that girl, right?
Yeah.
But he's like, no, I'm here. I have the skills. I have the power. I have the influence. I can make something happen. And he did. But the impact was generational, right? And I think if that story always inspires me to think, you know, even on a bad day, I don't know what the impact of our work as children's lawyers could be.
I love that story. And I think it's just such a good example, because I think it's more common that we don't know than we do how things turn out. It's one of the challenges in our profession. We know what happens in the court proceeding. We know what happens in the case. But when the family leaves the system, we never know. And so probably a lot of our best work is unseen. I mean, think back to 1800 to today, we all know Helen Keller's story and all that she did. So it's very powerful. I'm glad you shared that.
So along the lines of what we're talking about, we have a young mother in our community who has said that she is the first of her family to go to college. She is a nurse. She has a home. She's the first of her family to do many things, generationally speaking. And she attributes it all to her attorney that she had when she was a child in foster care. And that attorney said to her that you can do anything. And that attorney is no longer with our office, but still in touch with us. And I guarantee you, does not remember saying that to that child. She was lifting the child up, lifting a client up, looking at a problem, trying to solve it. And the ripples of that are generational now. And that's the kind of work we're talking about.
And that's just a single comment that he or she probably made, or maybe may make to lots of kids, but it sometimes it is those very small things that make all the difference. So in wrapping this up with all of you, I think, you know, our goal today was really just to remind you that the things that you're doing every day matter. You are needed, that if you are no longer in the profession or if you're not at your best, things are lost. Your perspective is lost, your critical thinking skills, you know, all of the things that you bring to the table. And on that note, we just want to acknowledge that some of you that listen to us are really out there on your own practicing in a county where you don't have a an ongoing community that you can connect with. And we welcome you here and are so glad that you have decided to listen. We currently have an email address that if you wanted to reach out with ideas for podcasts or to just communicate with us, I'll share that. It's info@childrenslaw.org. That's children with an S, L-A-W.org. That is the way to communicate with us now, and we would welcome that. But we also wanted to give you a heads up to stay tuned. We are working on some opportunities to connect more directly with us, and we will be talking more about that in future episodes. But please stay tuned. We would love to connect directly with you. And as always, thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you. Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer.